Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Chris Ranji, Amy Mark Scores with you. And joining us now in studio is Tim Lucchini. He is the CEO of Intramotive, which is a St. Louis-based startup, and it is converting conventional freight cars into battery-powered, self-propelled rail cars. A really cool idea that, Tim, as I just said, this reading about your company, reading about what you're doing has really just exposed my lack of vision, how you take things for granted. So thank you for joining us.
No, it's awesome to be here. Thanks for having me.
So with Intramotive, I guess it was new to me. Imagine it might be new to our listeners. What does it mean that you have these freight cars that are electric, like electric trains?
Yeah, exactly. So if you think of a train today, it might be 2 miles in length, and it might be the width of Manhattan, a major city of stuff that all has to move together. What it really means is access. So we can drive single units to end facilities like a manufacturing facility or like a warehouse where you might need one rail car worth of goods. You might not need 2 miles of stuff all at once. And now we can provide that access to these types of facilities. And today we're actively deployed in use cases like mining, like plant railroads, things that might be out of sight, out of mind for a lot of people, but really do serve as the starting point for these types of technologies to go out and be in the wild.
So the way it works now, is it that you've got, you know, all these different cars with different items on them, maybe different companies are shipping things, right? And you have to wait for the engine to pull everybody's goods. This would eliminate that, right? Like you, because I'm assuming there's a schedule and you kind of have to go by whatever the rail schedule is. This would sort of eliminate that where you can move things quicker?
Yeah, so the way to think about it really is that that would still exist where we play, which is what we've built as a self-propelled asset. You can think of a truck on rails and that can run in three ways. The first way is it can run on its own independently, point to point. The second mode is it can pull 1 to 5 traditional rail cars with it. And that gives you the unit economics of this 2 mile long train, but with 1 to 5 units at a time. And then the last mode is if it's in that long train, it turns the whole train into a hybrid. So you can start to decarbonize and get the electric propulsion system, take loads off the diesel engine and go across the country. But there's reasons to have each one of those modes of operation, and we can do all of them.
So it'd be sort of like having an engine in the middle of, if you had a really long 1 mile or 2 mile train, it'd be like the electric cars would be pulling some of the load, is what you're saying.
And I know you have some rail fans out there, so they already do that. They'll have 2 or 3 locomotives in a train set to be able to pull all those goods. The second or third locomotive in that train is not going to be providing anything other than power to the rest of the train. And we do that exact same thing, just in a granular way with batteries as the primary energy storage system.
So if it is a more granular way where it's 1 to 5 cars, say, if someone's listening and thinking, well, then why wouldn't, isn't that trucking? Isn't that what cross-country truckers do? So how would this better fill a need than the trucking industry?
Yeah, so first off, rail is still huge. So you have $700 billion worth of goods moving across the country and 160,000 miles of track across the country. What trucking does better today is speed and flexibility. So if I want to go from St. Louis here to Kansas City, I can have a truck come to my factory and pick something up and be in Kansas City in 4.5 hours, where rail today might be the lower cost option. It might be a tenth of the cost of that semi-truck, but it might take 4, 5, 6, maybe 7 days to get that route run. And so that speed and flexibility is a huge part of what we can offer and make the rail system more competitive as a whole.
So it's just cheaper. It might take a little longer, but it's just cheaper.
Today, when you look at the way that rail has run from the 1860s to today, it's always had a cost advantage, and that's driven a lot by infrastructure and scale. So you have these massive units that are running across the country.
And so I've heard you say that there's more track than there is highway in the country, right? Which doesn't seem... It seems like we are so focused on cars and highway and trucks and all of that. So I'm a little surprised to hear there's more track line.
There's a ton of track going everywhere. And the reason that you don't experience it, or even before I got into this industry, didn't really experience it, because it's out of sight, out of mind. and it's dedicated to freight already. So we don't have a ton of passenger traffic. We don't have these really high density passenger routes like Europe has. What we have is a ton of raw materials through to finished automobiles coming out of Ford's factories running on rails. And that's how this backbone of the supply chain for almost any industry works. And that's why it's so critical. And that's also why when something happens in rail, you see the whole world pause for a second and pay attention. And it's because of how critical it is as part of our infrastructure.
This may be a dumb question, because obviously you're going to have companies with bigger materials, raw materials, whatever it may be, that are using rail would love this system. Is this something that even a mass distributor of finished products like an Amazon would use?
Yeah, absolutely. So you'll see Amazon move things on rail. Mm-hmm. You'll see Ford move things on rail. I don't know what kind of cars you guys drive, but most likely it came out of a factory and went immediately into a rail car. And so you have that end of the supply chain where you have your finished goods coming out. You also have the raw materials coming out of the ground. So if I need calcium, manganese, all these periodic table of raw materials or anything that's getting farmed, all that's moving on rail too. So at the very beginning part of the supply chain, all the way through the finished end good products, you have rail as part of that backbone.
So why do this in St. Louis? Why base it here? I know that we have a history in the past where we were the center of rail transportation, not so much like that anymore. So why pick this particular location?
St. Louis is a great place to be for a huge number of reasons. We've gotten great support from the community in what we're building. Also, if I want to move anywhere in the country, I can access it from St. Louis. So we have access to six Class 1 railroads. We have access to a good host of major terminal operators and short lines. And that's a huge important piece because if I go anywhere else in the country, they'll ask which Class 1 railroad do you want to be connected to. But outside the back of our factory and through Terminal Railroad, we can access the entire country. And that's a huge benefit that St. Louis has. Again, it's out of sight, out of mind for most people that aren't experiencing the rail system in that way, but it's a huge advantage. And then on top of it, the workforce here is amazing. The team that we've built is awesome, having access to the right people and proving that we don't have to do this in San Francisco or New York. We can do this right here in a community like St. Louis that can lean in and be technology forward as a community.
You know, when we're thinking of, you know, battery-powered electric rail, a lot of people, their experience with, you know, electric would be like electric vehicles. And obviously, they have their pros and cons with the batteries and the way the batteries respond differently to heat or to cold. How different or similar are these rail cars to what the average person knows about an EV?
Yeah, so the beauty of rail is the efficiency of it. So the right-of-ways at all the crossings means you don't have to start and stop a lot. They have 0% grades for a good amount of the track, which means you're not climbing up hills or anything. You're going through mountains instead of over them. That adds a bunch of energy efficiency that's just innate in the system. And then on top of it, the automotive industry went so fast and aggressive towards electric vehicles that we're actually using the same types of power systems, the same type of motors, same types of sensors and perception systems that the auto industry has used in a way that rail couldn't have done this on.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
On their own, but we're leveraging a system that might have 200 kilowatt hours of battery. And I drive an F-150 Lightning, so I have 131 kilowatt hours of capacity in that pickup truck. So our rail car systems aren't that much bigger than what you would get from one of those EVs. That also means the charging infrastructure is there. We can answer that question. The supply chain questions are there. And we can provide a complete system to our customers that gives you a system that can pull several hundred miles of range with a vehicle that's 286,000 pounds. So that's three times the weight of a traditional semi-truck when you look at how heavy that is. And that's just the efficiency of rail at play that makes battery electric work on that scale. And then if you do want to go to St. Louis to Chicago or St. Louis to the Port of Long Beach, you can run that with the traditional train set and we can fit in that train.
So it does work long distance. You wouldn't, because we think of electric vehicles, so we would have to stop halfway to Chicago and charge up.
Correct. Right? Yeah. the key to what we're doing is it's backwards compatible. So if you turn our system off, we have all the standard couplers, air brakes, safety mechanisms that you're going to see with a rail car today, so that we can just go along in that train and go across the country in that long haul route. And then as battery tech gets better or anything else that comes that might be a breakthrough, we can implement that as well.
So, dumb question, what is the charging mechanism for this?
Yeah, we use level 2 chargers, just like the automotive EV space does. So you can use a level 2 AC or level 2 DC charger. And really what that means is that the infrastructure has been sized and supported, and a lot of the standards and specifications are there, and we can just plug right into that same ecosystem.
So what has growth been like in terms of business for you? And if this sort of sounds like it, we're going to move this direction anyway, that, you know, whether it's this company or another company that does it, we're going to utilize this technology. So how much growth has there been?
No, it's been a great amount of growth, and we're 5 years old, so we're still a relatively young company, but we started with 3 people, an idea, no resources, no customers, and now we've grown to 50 people here in St. Louis, customers that are using this every single day. We're going to move roughly 1 million tons of material this year in production for customers. We're going to move over 14,000 carloads of goods in production in revenue service. So that's a massive amount of growth. And then you can look at the total tonnages in rail and the amount of material that's moved. And we have a ton of potential to continue to grow and grow this team and grow. Like you said, this future will exist. And we're excited to be the ones that are bringing it to life.
And you, as we mentioned earlier, you're from Ohio, lived in Michigan, spent some time in South Dakota or North Dakota.
Yep, South Dakota.
South Dakotas. We can summarize Dakotas it. For yeah. school. And you came here about 10 years ago. Did you come here for Boeing?
Yep. So I came here to work in the defense industry. I did a PhD research in jet engines and got a chance as a domestic PhD to come to Boeing, work in the defense industry, work on cruise missiles, fighter jets, unmanned platforms. And then in 2017, when everybody thought they were going to fly to work, I got to help build a flying car and help put all that system together, which is a bunch of batteries, motors, and sensors. And then a longtime friend of mine, Alex Pfeiffer, who I grew up with in Ohio, said, hey, we are studying rail in my MBA program and looking at competitive threats of autonomous trucks, electric trucks. And what do you think happens if you take the technologies you've been building the last couple of years and apply it to trains? And that's really the genesis for how we got started.
So when are we going to start flying to work?
TBD. It looks like okay. I mean, one of those things where every year it's next year.
We keep getting promised.
Well, and it might be on a train like in Back to the Future 3.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
But it is a really cool idea. I mean, trains are not an anachronism. Like you said, we use them so much, but it's out of sight, out of mind. And so you're using this very modern technology and applying it to something that has existed through, you know, over a century, a couple centuries, I should say. And that really hadn't been thought of before, had it? And not on this scale?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about rail is it's a super efficient, very stable business that's been getting 1% to 2% better every year for 150 to 200 years. Where we are at now is a ton of technologies come to fruition that makes sense to apply to rail. And it's those types of natural things where when you see this thing running, you say, this makes sense. Why didn't we do this first? And it's just a natural fit. And it's solving problems for our customers. It's providing better access to the shippers or people that are at the end of the lines, and does really give that all-in, just-in-time delivery model, which everybody's talking about their same-day deliveries that they're getting from anything they order online. If I'm a business, I want that same type of service. I want things to fast and flexibly show up at my facility so that I can keep doing what I need to do to run my business or get the goods to my house and get the things where they need to go. And that's really what we provide.
And how soon before this is used for passenger rail?
Yeah, we get asked all the time. It's totally possible. In ways, you can see that this has already happened in some passenger scenarios. Like when you're at an airport, you'll see a passenger mover move around, and a lot of times that'll be unmanned. And it's odd that people are more comfortable with that scenario than moving rocks, which is where we're focusing at that other side of the spectrum. But it just that's where we as a business will focus in the near term.
And then I know you mentioned you have, with the 50 people here in St. Louis, those are clients or employees?
Those are teammates help us build this technology and bring it forward.
And that is, you've got your first on the tracks?
Yep. For a year at this point.
What is your growth projection for the next 1 year, 5 years, 10 years.
Yeah. So it's when we run these spreadsheets and models, it's kind of crazy because we're in hundreds and thousands of a percent growth trajectory. Yeah. So it's high. And for us, it's about how much capacity can we provide and how quickly can we staff up the manufacturing and go and deliver on these units that people are asking for. And for the first several years, it was trying to get our story out and selling this word of mouth with myself and my co-founder, Alex. And now we've got inbound interest coming in, and we're going to work as hard as we can to keep up with that demand.
As we say goodbye here, Tim, a listener has texted in with a question because you are from Ohio and went to school in Michigan, wants to know if it's Buckeyes or Wolverines. I'm going to answer for him. It's Go Sparty. He went to Michigan State.
Yes.
There you go.
And I will say this. I love that you're doing this here in St. Louis. I'm a lifelong St. Louis and Ronge, same thing. And I feel like this is redemption for us giving the original rail system to Chicago and thinking that steamboats were the way of the future. And there's this Harvard professor who wrote his thesis on the history of Chicago, whole chapter dedicated to St. Louis, going, we don't need trains. At any rate, you start this thing here,
thanks,
and this thing blows up. I feel like this is redemption.
There you go.
So thank you.
It just took us a couple years, but we're here, and we're bringing it back.
It's so St. Louis. Takes us a few years. We'll get there. Tim Lucchini, CEO of Intramotive, is very, very interesting stuff, and best of luck to you. And we're appreciative this is happening locally here in St. Louis.
No, I'll just end it with anybody out there that's listening that wants to help us build the future and help us do it here in St. Louis, reach out, and we'd love to chat.
It's Chris and Amy on KMOX.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.